I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1984. The album, Neil's Heavy Concept Album. The artist, Nigel Planer, and my guest again, Scott White. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
Now, I say again, and the reason I'm going to bring this up, normally I don't do behind-the-scenes stuff, but I will say so.
I was going to tell him the story about what's happened so far.
Yeah. So, so we were originally talking about two different albums. You picked one, and then you changed. You're like, I'd rather do this one. I'm like, great. And I agreed to it. I clearly agreed to it. And then we recorded the episode, and I completely had forgotten, and I fumbled my way through it. And I'm like, you know what? No, this makes everybody look, well, it makes me look really bad, but in general, it's just like, that's why I really appreciate you sitting down with me doing this again, because honestly, here's the best part of this is finally getting to re-listen to this without the stress of like, did I fuck that episode up? Was like, this is a really fun album. Holy shit. I really like this album.
You did enjoy it.
I love this so much.
Yeah. Well, this is a long time coming because I looked. Do you know how many emails between you and I before this recording right now?
I don't.
87. 87 emails between us before this momentous occasion right now. It's actually going to happen.
It
would be so hilarious if we just cut out right now.
Yeah, right. Oh my God! So let's talk a little bit. So luckily, the delightful Vic Shati hooked me up with you and said that you'd be a good guest. He was not wrong. You were a great guest on a bad episode. So let's tell the audience a little bit about you, where you are, what your work is in comedy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
My name is Scott White. I am based out of Houston, Texas. I have been doing comedy for about 20 years. The comedy consists of mainly stand-up. That's my main form of living. But I also do improv. I'm also I do radio sketches and stuff like that. So, but most of what I do is stand-up. Been doing that for 20 years.
Now, I don't, you probably said this last time, but it didn't strike me because, again, I was so nervous. I'm curious, you say radio stuff, so are there comedy outlets where you are, like where you can actually do comedy on the radio?
Yeah, you call in and, you know, you'll just do a little sketch or something with the disc jockeys on the air, so that's really fun.
That's good stuff.
It is good stuff. It sort of harkens back. What was it actually? I don't know when this is. I don't know when this is going to come out. But last week, I was an extra on a movie. Mm-hmm. Where I was extra on a movie, so I was on a movie set. I was in a commercial, so I was on a commercial set. I did an improv show. I did a stand-up show. I did a call-in radio show. I did a private show, and I'm finishing it out here with this podcast. So
that's amazing.
So last week was a really good week for, I mean, not, a, it was a good week. I hit all the bases, I think.
That's fucking fantastic. I love, it's so good. I love that you got to do, can I ask what you were an extra in? I'm very curious because that is in my wheelhouse right now.
It was a film called Playing God, and I didn't meet, but I got to see Michael McKean.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yes.
Oh, that's so good. You know, can I tell you?
I didn't meet him because, you know, he doesn't want to let any pissant extra to go, oh, Mr. McKean, I'm a big. So, but he was sitting in a chair on his phone during takes, and he was texting, and in my heart of hearts, I was just wishing, I hope he's texting Squiggy right now.
Oh my God, that's so good. You know, that's a guy, he's a dream guest for this show. Maybe one day it will happen, but I love that you have I don't think I've ever been in the room with him. That's so good.
You could do his album. He did an album called Lenny and the Squid Tones.
I just picked that up a couple weeks ago. I have that album.
So, yes. So maybe if we do another one together, we could do that album.
Oh, hell yeah. So. That would be a lot of fun. So what we've picked today is, if folks are not familiar, we'll talk about your experience with English comedy. So Nigel Planer played Neil on The Young Ones. And then he was also involved in, what was the name of it? Because we've talked about it on this show before. Oh, my God. I've only listened to it.
Filthy Rich and Flat Trap?
No, it's another one. It is called Bad. Oh, my God. Bad something.
Bad news.
Bad News. Thank you. There we go. So, Bad News is also great and also got a lot of really great music in it. Those were produced by Brian May. But this one is like a sketch album, but like a full-on, like, beautiful music album. It's kind of like the songs in and of themselves are all sketches because he doesn't really... They're all played seriously. They're all played straight, but he gets to just insert himself wherever he wants in each of the songs.
And I think he's sort of taken the piss out of concept albums. How people think concept albums are really art. You know, people who make them are really arty and are really above everybody's heads.
Right.
And I think he sort of takes the piss out of that with this album.
Absolutely. And does it in a way, though, where it's also like, God, that's some really good ass music that he's playing. Like, it's really well played.
The songs are well played. He's a good singer. I don't know if he's playing the instruments. But I believe he's a good musician as well. So yes, it was just a fun album from start to finish. So
let's talk about a bit how you discovered it, and how you discovered English comedy in general. Because the one thing that stood out last time was just like how important English comedy is to you. And I love hearing that from a Texas guy. It's awesome to hear that. That's one of those things that we can share no matter where the hell we are.
Well, I live in Texas now, but I grew up in Michigan, so I'm a Yankee.
Yes, okay. You are a Yankee. That is true. Okay, but still, Michigan's far enough away from New York that we'll count you as both. We'll just for the sake of.
So, my first introduction to English comedy was Benny Hill. They had him on late night, Channel 50, which was our UHF station when I was growing up. And it would be a half hour of Benny Hill, and then they would do a half hour of Prison or Cell Block H, which was an Australian soap opera about a women's prison. So.
Oh, my God.
So my first introduction was Benny Hill, and I love Benny Hill.
Of course.
And a side note, Benny Hill is sort of I hate the term guilty pleasure, because if something gives you pleasure, it shouldn't be guilty if you're not hurting anybody.
Sure, yeah.
Right. Now, when I first watched Benny Hill, I was young and stuff like that. Now that I've grown up, you know, and I've read stuff and I've seen stuff, and, you know, Benny Hill pretty much took from everybody. So, to know that a guy that you grew up with and you really loved was a pretty big thief in the comedy world, you know, that's sort of disheartening.
Sure.
Yeah. And the thing is, he not only stole from other people, he stole from himself, because he does the same jokes over and over and over again in the shows, you know, for all the time that it was on the air.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
And then I was introduced to Monty Python at a young age, and I wasn't really, I think the first thing I ever saw Monty Python was the Holy Grail, and at the age I was at, it went over my head. I didn't get it. You know, Benny Hill glaring at women, you know, slapstick and stuff like that. You could get that as a young person. Monty Python sort of went over my head. So my knowledge of English comedy was pretty much Benny Hill at that point. Then MTV started showing the TV show called The Young Ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at midnight, and they played it at midnight on Sundays, which was an odd time. And this is when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
So, And I don't know, I discovered it, and I watched the first episode, and this was sort of the new wave of comedy at the time, you know, the new British comedy. They were like people like Benny Hill and stuff like that were passé at that time, and these were the new guys coming into comedy. And it was, and the show, much like the album, you know, it was comedy. They had music, they had guests, you know, they had guest stars. Every, you know, their fellow comedians were guest stars. It was self-aware. It made fun of itself. It broke the fourth wall. It was all that stuff in a half hour, and in a real half hour, because they in England, they don't show commercials during the show.
Right.
So it was real half hour, or maybe even longer. So, you know, because they would go like 34 or 35 minutes or something like that. So,
mm-hmm.
And so when I discovered it, I realized that, you know, a small group of people in my high school also discovered it. So it was fun to get to the point where you would watch the episode on Sunday, then go to school on Monday and talk about it with your friends. So that was like a bonding experience over the young ones. So, and that was really, really fun to talk about something that not everybody knew about. You know, you sort of had a special little secret with you and a couple of your friends, and you talk about it and you enjoy it. And there's only 12 episodes, so you know, you went through it pretty quick, and they showed it like a couple, you know, they went through it a couple of times, and I enjoyed watching each one every time. So but during one of the, and then Nigel Planner, he guest VJ'd on MTV.
That's funny.
All this hippie music and stuff like that. I remember this specifically. He said, let's hear, you know, Bang a Gong. And they started playing the Power Station version. And he's like, no. We want the T-Rex. So he stopped the video in the middle of it. And he played T-Rex. the T-Rex version again. But during this, they showed a commercial of Neil's Heavy concept album. Because it wasn't available in stores at the States. You had to borrow it. I have friends in England,
uh-huh.
And I talked to them, and they said it was available in record stores in England at the time, but it wasn't available in record stores at the States at the time, and you had to send away for it. Well, I never did.
Mm-hmm.
And then years went by, and then I just, you know, then after the young ones, I discovered Fawlty Towers. And then got into Monty Python, watching the TV show, you know, it made more, I was older, I got it now, I thought it was very funny. Fawlty Towers, one of the best shows ever.
Of course.
Yes. And the thing with all the British shows is, most of them, like Fawlty Towers and the Young Ones, they're only like 12 episodes. They only did 12 episodes, and I think that's why they're considered such classic, because there's not so many of them. And the thing in England, which I've discovered in England, which is like in the States, people will fall in love with a character. You know, so they'll get typecast. You know, so, you know, Adam West was Batman, and Adam West could never be anything but Batman. Because in everybody's mind, he was Batman. In England, people fall in love with the actor. So they'll let the actor do different things.
Right.
And they'll follow the actor from show to show to show. Because all these guys did different shows, different characters, all that. So, so finally, after years, I started my own vinyl comedy record collection, and I sent away at eBay. I finally got Neil's Heavy Concept, because he released the single off that album. You've listened to it, so Hole in My Shoe.
Uh-huh.
That was released as the single.
Okay.
So I heard that they had a video for that on MTV. So I watched the video. I actually had the videotape, so I'd watch it. Fast forward year, I buy the album on eBay, I get it, I listen to it, and like you said, it was fantastic. It brought me back to high school, to actually a good time. You know, high school was not the best time in the world for me, but that time of having my friends, having that little secret, watching the young ones, staying up late on Sunday night, you know, because my parents would let me do that, staying up late on the Sunday night, you know, that felt a little rebellious at the time. Not that it really was, but sure. It was, oh, I'm up to 1 o'clock on a school night. That's outrageous. So, and then, yeah, so that's why I wanted to do this album. So, you know, it captured a special part, you know, a special time in my life. So that's why I wanted to do this album.
That's, you know, I love being able to have something other than, I think typically, like, say somebody discovers a Python or they discover this or that. Oh, you can finally get this show on DVD. You can just rewatch it. But I also like that you've got this thing that parallels this show, that it's got this, it's a totally different element. It's not an episode of the show. It's 41 minutes of music that's adjacent to it, is in the spirit of it, but it's also its own thing entirely.
Oh, it's definitely its own thing, yes.
I love that about it, because they pick, you know, one of the more subdued characters from the show is the main focus of it. And again, it's kind of got this fire sign-ish, just the way it weaves together, and there's an actual kind of a story that's happening throughout it. There's that.
Yeah, I always feel that this album, you need to listen to this album with headphones.
Absolutely,
I think this helps
yeah.
the album as well.
And it's sorry, I was taking a sip of water. Let's start. I don't know if you have the track listing in front of you, which, by the way,
I do have the track
listing. Good.
I
also found the commercial. May have been the same one you saw. I found the commercial on YouTube. Have you watched the commercial since?
I haven't watched the commercial since.
I'm gonna have to send you this link, because I think it would be very funny for it. We don't have to talk about it now, but it would be very funny. I would love to know what you think of it after rewatching it. I will put it in there. Let me look at the. I mean, it opens with a song called Hello Vegetables, which, I mean, come on.
Hello Vegetables. Yeah, it's just... That's right. No introduction. No, you know, it's just this guy talking to vegetables right out of the gate. Yeah, so... and I think that established... You know, that's established that this is just... You know, this is a hippie guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think a person could listen to this album without knowing the Young Ones and enjoy it. But if you know the Young Ones, then you just get another level of enjoyment of this album from knowing the character.
Right. Well, I'm definitely the former, because I only know maybe an episode of the Young Ones. It wasn't something I grew up on. So, and I kind of loosely know the characters, but this album, it absolutely stands up for me anyway. I mean, but it's also my style. It's also very all over the place, and the times when mm-hmm. it needs to be well produced, it's well. I mean, it's the entire thing is well produced, but the times when they really need to, like, just show you what they can do, like, the music is great. The when they need sound effects, the few times there are sound effects in it, they're also very good. The star power for me is remarkable, at least in terms of people who have become incredibly famous since. It's kind of
Stephen Fry is on this
yeah.
album, and Jennifer Saunders.
Ah, it's so good. It's so good. There's so many good just little things in between the music or as part of the music. That's the one thing where it's like you're listening to it, and I don't find myself annoyed when this really good song comes on and he comes on with his dumb voice and is just talking through it. And I, for some reason, I'm like, it's extra charming.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have a favorite track off of this one? We probably talked about it last time, but I want to make sure that we cover it.
Well, I don't know. I mean... The track that stuck in my head is Hole in My Shoe, because uh-huh. that was a single, you know, and, Lentil Nightmare, I just, you know, this album captures, you know, he's a hippie. It captures the 60s very well, but it also captures the time that it was made in the 80s. It mm-hmm. also captures that. Very well too, and that Lentil Nightmare, that sound to me, that sounds exactly like an Iron Maiden. It's something you would hear on an Iron Maiden
right
album.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's played so seriously. It's
right.
It's everything that Bad News was. It's
yes.
just played 100% for the music, and then and it's about
the music is not a joke.
Yeah.
The music is. And that's what makes everything else better. If the music was half-assed or something like that, then it wouldn't work. The fact that this music is well, you know, well performed and well edited and well engineered makes the album even better. So
it's so strange to me, the idea of doing, so here's our idea for a sketch comedy album. This is a sketch comedy album that is parodying a music album, but here's the thing, to sell it, obviously all the music's got to be good. It's just a very weird idea. I don't know that there are that many albums that are, just
also,
outwardly are that.
The album, Neil keeps commenting that this, you know, oh, this is my, so he keeps commenting on the album while he's making the album.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that, okay, that this is my album and we got to do, because I think at one point his mom interrupts him.
Yeah.
With a rap. You know, like I said, it's the 80s, so his mom interrupts him with the rap, and he's like, Mom, you're ruining my album! So
it's so perfect. That's another thing, too, where there's... it seems to know what it is, because in no way are they saying, yeah, here's some really great rap, or here's necessarily really good parody of rap, but it definitely has this feel. It is the feel of early 80s rap, however.
Yes.
You know... It does nail that perfectly, even though it's this English mother rapping.
Yeah, this is a time capsule of the time, I believe. This is a very good time capsule of the mid 80s right there.
Did it? Did the Young Ones? Did this album? Well, let's say the Young Ones, because you obviously knew the Young Ones before you actually had a chance to know the album. Did it particularly paint your humor, or is it just something that you absorbed unconsciously and wouldn't necessarily be able to peg in your work?
I probably couldn't do what the Young Ones did, but because I'm a fan of Mr. Show, and mm-hmm. I like how one sketch just goes right into the other.
Right.
And like this album, like one song goes right into the other. There's no break. So, and how the Young Ones, the TV show, they would be in their living room, and then all of a sudden they would be at a game show. You know, they'd turn on the television and they'd go into a game show. I like when things are connected and they can bring everything back around. So at one episode, they're swatting at flies. And the flies turn out to be cameramen because they're doing a fly on the wall documentary.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then you see this big, you hear this big, and you see this big gas, and it's one of them. It's one of the Young Ones spraying the flies. So I love when everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, so, and, I do some of that, a lot of that in my stand up is, that's why I'm not a one-liner. A lot of comics are one-liners and stuff like that. A lot of comics are one-liners, and then a lot of comics are storytellers, where one bit is a huge chunk. The way I do mine is I do bits, similar bits that flow into each other, to come up with one long bit. So mm-hmm. they're not one-liners. But then again, they're not one cohesive story, somewhere in the middle. And that's where I think the Young Ones in this album falls into.
That's perfect. We've gone over the track that you said sticks in your head the most. When you first heard it, was there anything that has maybe since made more sense to you, or since meant more to you, that after re-listening to it over and over again?
It's a weird thing. This is serendipity or something like that. I read an article recently, because there's a song, Neil Ate a Hamburger.
Yes.
You know, Neil the Barbarian. Neil Ate a Hamburger, or Neil the Barbarian. And I read an article say where a lot of people associate vegetarianism with feminism.
Mm-hmm.
They say that being a vegetarian is a feminine trait. I don't know if I believe that or not, but it says that people who are vegetarians are less aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And in this song, you know, Neil's a vegetarian in real life, but he accidentally eats a hamburger, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, then we get this rockin' heavy metal, you know, we get this heavy metal over-the-top song about now how now Neil is, you know, a monster killing machine because he ate a hamburger. So I think that, I thought that was weird that I just read an article, you know, that vegetarians are passive and meat eaters are you know, aggressive.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, and I feel like that's been that's been going around for long enough too, or you know, in at least conceptually, I feel like playing with that early on, and also doing it in a way that, again, the music's perfect, but he also is incredibly. I don't know. There's something about that character being angry or that character being aggressive that I find really, really funny.
Because this is the 80s when, you know, when it definitely wasn't as PC as it is now, you know, and now people are doing studies on meat and stuff like that. It may have been around then, but it wasn't as big. And I know vegetarian wasn't that big as it is now, back in the 80s. So just the fact that they were sort of ahead of the curve on this about, you know, about meat making you aggressive and stuff like that, mm-hmm. whether it's true or not, that, you know, that was the message that they were getting through. And that, then they may have been making fun of it as well.
Yeah.
The fact that you eat a hamburger and you're just going to, now that now you're just a monster. So I think it's more making fun of it than anything else.
I also love that Neil the Barbarian is narrated by Nigel Planer's brother, which I did not know. That's pretty funny. And then Lentil Nightmare, as we mentioned earlier, narrated by Stephen Fry. God, there's something about this is one that, like, legitimately people will, if they bring an album on here and I like it, you know, I'm excited to talk about it, but then I'm like, I got to move on to the next one.
I'm going to interview you here for a second.
Yeah.
Anybody brought an album on that you listen to and you're like, oh, this is going to suck when we talk about this, because I didn't find this album funny at all, or.
Yep. That is definitely, that's happened a ton, and it's partially, sometimes it's a bias because I've either heard it before, I've heard bits of it, or I'm not a fan of the artist. I rarely have my mind changed. However, I have had people I have had people change my mind in turn, not necessarily in terms of me liking it, but saying, hey, here's my perspective. And I'm like, you know what? I 100% value your perspective. I still don't like it, but I value your perspective, and it's completely valid, even if it's something I hate. You know, so I like having those moments too. It's more fun though when I get something like this, where I'm like, I'm going to re-listen to this. Like, I can guarantee you I will re-listen to this album. This is actually one that a friend gave to me, because he's given me a bunch of albums because he cleans them up as a hobby, which is insane because it's a lot of work.
You had this album.
Yes, I had it. And I was like, I need to listen to that sometime. I need to listen to it sometime. And you mentioned it, and I had it there, and then completely listened to the wrong one. And then I'm so happy that I finally got to it. I'm like, shit, I'm going to re-listen. He gave it to me for a reason, and you picked it for a reason. It's, oh man, it's so much fun.
Well, yeah, and even the front cover is it's a parody of a Rolling Stones album, and the back cover is a parody of a Beatles album. So, these are just little details, you know, that I love.
Do you have the LP with you at the moment? I'm just curious if there are any details that you particularly love about it, because I can. There's not a lot of good scans of it on, especially on Wikipedia. They're shit, frankly.
Well, the back has Neil. The back is a parody of Sergeant Pepper,
mm-hmm.
and it just has Neil in, you know, in four different poses, even with one with the back to, you know, he has the Paul is Dead pose, which is great, and it has a little insert, and the insert. It just is the epitome of Neil's personality, because it says hurdy-gurdy man lyrics reproduced with kind permission. You know, my mm-hmm. white bicycle lyrics reproduced with kind permission. So he's like, you know, he's making fun. You know, he's did the liner notes as his character. It's like, you know, we he's kind permission of all these people that gave us permission to use these lyrics. So.
I love that. So yeah, it's also weird to do something. Not a lot of comedians, I don't think, can do as much with a kind of low energy character who's nice. You know, that's a weird thing to do and still be funny. But it's the characters, obviously. I don't know how long he'd been doing it before the young ones, but I believe he
started doing this character in his stand-up routine.
Mm-hmm.
With comic strip. That was the name of the TV show, and I believe that was the club where all these younger people worked. And he was doing this, you know, he was doing this hippie guy in his stand-up before he got on the television show and of course the album. So
right there, this makes me think, you know, something that I listen to a ton of podcasts, and I have some favorite characters, and it makes me think there might be a time when there's going to be a really good TV show, or really avant-garde TV show, put together from characters within these different podcast universes. And it's something where I'm like, can you imagine being somebody who saw him doing that character in a club, and then you get to see it on TV, and it's like, holy shit, like that, I got to see that on its way, you know, on its way up.
Right. Yeah. The beginnings of stuff. And the thing is, the United States, the U.S. wanted to do a TV version of The Young Ones, and Nigel Planner was the only one who signed up out of the four.
Interesting.
And it didn't get picked up because, you know how the U.S. is, you know, they'll take, well, I mean, I guess sometimes it works, sometimes, you know, they water stuff down. I know they tried to bring Fawlty Towers over here, and
yep,
it just didn't work. They watered it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they were, and Men Behaving Badly, they tried to bring that over there, and they watered it down. I mean, they have had some success, you know, Sanford and Son, All in the Family.
Sure.
That was back in the 70s when people weren't so, quick to judge. But apparently the show did not get picked up. And from what I've heard, Nigel Planner was extremely relieved because he did not want to spend, he was not having a good time over here performing on that show. And when it got canceled, he was extremely relieved that he could go back to England.
God, how weird must that have been, playing your own character with a bunch of Americans playing what I can only assume are weird analogs to the guys that you have been working with for a few years and have developed a rapport with. That's insane. Because, I mean, I've seen there's a really, unfortunately, I love Craig Bierko, but there's a very shitty Red Dwarf. They tried to bring Red Dwarf over here, and he played one of the characters, and it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah. You notice all the, you know, all the, like, All in the Family, Sanford and Son, that was all in the 70s when, you know, when people could, it's weird. Like, in the 70s, they could go farther, but they couldn't go farther. And now we can go farther, but we don't go farther. Am I making any sense? It's like in the 70s, they could talk about race and homosexuality in a way that was sort of funny, but sort of bigoted, but the way it was bigoted because they were making fun of the bigots.
Right.
But, you know, you couldn't say certain, you know, a lot of words on television. Now you can say a lot of words on television, but you can't comment on somebody's race or sexuality without somebody taking it the wrong way and your show getting canceled. And by no means, I'm not comparing this in any way to, you know, what recently happened with Roseanne, which
she said was
horrible, was terrible. But I believe satire is, it's like, in All in the Family, you know, you were supposed to laugh at Archie Bunker for being so fucking ignorant.
Yeah.
But then again, you fall into the problem of people were laughing with Archie Bunker because they felt the way that he did.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I don't know, slippery slope. Their intention was not to, you know, was to make fun of the bigot.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. No, I do know exactly what you're saying. So there are certain challenges with how you do it deftly. And there's also, what's interesting is, like, that show could also be remade in a time, frankly, when there was no internet and people weren't aware that there was another show out there that they're basically ripping off. You know, like, there's a big gap there, too, you know?
Yeah, back then, they had no idea that all those shows came from England.
Yeah, and the idea that there would be, to me, it's strange that there's this cult hit and that you would try and remake this cult hit for America with one of the guys in it. It's like, no, all the teenagers who would want to watch this have already seen this show. It's very, and this is going, you know, you're defanging it to do it right, to do it in America. It's just so strange to me.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Now I'm wondering if any young ones clips from the American version are out there, because I want to see that.
You know what? I don't know. I don't know how far I've gotten in the process of making the show. So
This is something I'm gonna have to dig into, because there are a few others. There's also a remake of the IT Crowd, which was bad. That unfortunately.
Oh. Well, you know, and then you got. Then there was. They remade The Office.
Sure.
So sometimes it does. Sometimes it does work. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you have, okay, so let's look in here. So what's something we haven't brought up yet is a lot of the music on here are covers, which I love.
Yes.
Because they are an actual, like, genuine new spin on these songs. Some of them either slowed down to meet him, or he speeds up to meet the song, or they also comment on how the song is going. Like, literally one song is like, no, it's going too slow, and then they speed it up, but you hear him speed up. I love that shit.
Right, he's yelling at the engineer while he's singing his song, and I thought that was just so brilliant. That's the stuff that I love. Breaking the fourth wall is stuff that I love to do. I love to do that. So when I ever hear it, when somebody's breaking the fourth wall and something like that, so while he's singing a song and he's yelling at his engineer to slow it down or speed it up, I just think stuff like that is great.
Yeah, it really is, and it works. At least for me, it works better in an album, because you don't have somebody who has to stare into the camera, which adds an extra level of non-believability. Here, you've got this personal moment, as you say, especially if you're wearing headphones. You've got this personal moment with this character who's just talking to you from out of the record. Oh, one of the things you brought up last time too that I obviously didn't get to hear was like the bits where he's talking about the quality of the record and how there's some peanut butter on it.
At the end of the side one, you hear an audible zip. It's, oh, there's a, you know, and he comments that there's a scratch on the record. He's like, oh, there's a glob of peanut butter. So you hear a glob of peanut butter. And I said, and what I said last time was, and you can look this up, is the end of the, that's the Cosmic Jam.
Yeah.
So the end of the first side ends with this Cosmic Jam of him commenting on scratches and the poor quality of the record and the needle going through peanut butter. He made a special cassette jam for the cassettes.
That's great.
Because that would not work on a cassette. So the end of side one on a cassette was totally different than the end of side one on an album.
It's wonderful.
So, yes, I thought that was a very nice touch. And that is on YouTube. And if you look it up, he says something like, oh, no, the tape's unwinding. It's getting all squeegee. I've got it. Yeah, so... To me, that's he really cared about the project to do that, to put it on a, you know, to make, to fit the, you know, to fit the outlet that it was coming off of, whether it be an album or cassette. So that was, I thought that was very, very fun.
Were there some other albums around the time that you actually got to get your hands on that might have either influenced you or just tickled you?
Let's see. Well, the first comedy album I ever bought was Sam Kennison, Louder Than Hell.
Uh-huh.
Because when I was because Sam hit his peak when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the biggest thing around, you know, and he was also controversial, so you can't listen to his album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so the first album I ever bought was Sam Kennison's Louder Than Hell. How many albums do you have, comedy albums, would you estimate?
I don't know at this point. It's got to be about 600, maybe, I'm guessing.
Okay, well, I'm behind you. I've got about 200.
Uh-huh.
So, but Lollipops and Werewolves by Patton Oswalt,
oh,
I
sure.
think might be the perfect comedy album. It's a mixture of fart jokes and obscure humor and political humor. I mean, it's got everything. It's got him dealing with a heckler. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's been about deathbed, the bed that eats people. It's just, I love that bit. And it's so, it's not as obscure now as it was then.
Sure.
Because I think, yeah, I think because of the album, things have got out. But I just think that's a perfect album. And then, I mean, you know, just listening to Carlin's AM/FM.
Sure.
You know, his clean side and his dirty side. And to me, the albums I love too. Jerry Seinfeld, I believe Jerry Seinfeld said this. It's like when you listen to a lot of comics doing stand-up, you think to yourself, I could do that. But when you listen to Jonathan Winters do stand-up, you think, I could never do that. And that's how, and I have Jonathan Winters albums. And Jonathan Winters, you know, just the stuff that he does off the top of his head and stuff like that. Honestly, I think he was, I don't know if this is sacrilege or anything like that, I think he was better than Robin Williams at doing that. And
Jonathan
Winters didn't have the, you know, didn't have the cloud of being a joke thief on top of that.
right. Yeah, there's... Yeah, that's a guy who so off the top of his head, it would be, I don't want to say impossible, but borderline impossible for him to do the same thing twice.
Right.
That's how it seemed.
Smack twice.
I'm wondering if I feel like I'm repeating myself, but again, nobody else heard me other than you. So, I've been wondering for a while, because I don't do stand up. I've been wondering if there are any. Genuinely, I can think of one, but avant-garde stand-up albums where it's you really fuck with the form, and it's not just you telling jokes, and there's something, there's a Lily Tomlin album that does this, but I can't think of too many others that also screw with the form of just your standard issue stand-up comedy album.
I mean, yeah, like you said, there are probably some out there, but the majority of my 200 albums are just of the stand-ups. Yeah, I have sketch, but of the stand-ups, it's just guys and gals up there telling stories and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. Just speaking into the mic. So
yeah, it's something that I would like to hear, but I feel like it's got to be somebody obviously who really loves not just stand-up, but you've got to have a love for some other stuff as well. There's going to be one of these days where I'm just going to be like, all right, I'm going to put down my money and I'm just going to be like, hey, stand-up comic, I want you to do an insane. I just wonder if that's something that a stand-up would do nowadays. I'm not sure.
Stand-ups nowadays, everybody's looking to be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But to be different and accepted as well.
Sure.
You know, just to be, you're just going to be, I, there's some comics I know, they're just out there to be weird. They're just weird to be weird. They just want to see how they can. I've never been, and I know comics like that. A lot of, some comics say, I like to make the audience uncomfortable and get them back. That's not my style.
That'd be weird.
I like to go out there and make people laugh at what I don't really like to make people uncomfortable.
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean
that's just my style. That's just me. Sure. So.
Yeah. No. I think I mean more in the terms of how the album ends up presented. Whether it's like a mix again. All I can think now is of Lily Tomlin's album. So really, Modern Scream is a great. It's something to listen to, and it's exactly what I'm talking about. And nobody's probably going to make anything better, but it is something that I would love for somebody to try and do again. It's a mix of stand-up, it's a mix of sketch, and literally the sketch is about her making the stand-up album. It's pretty great. It's challenging.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Noises Off.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
See behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Well, I this probably doesn't qualify, but I have a Nichols and May album.
Yeah.
And those two work great together. But the last track is them working the sketch.
Yes, right.
And they left that on the album, and I thought that was very interesting. Them working a sketch. I believe the producer is in the room with them, and they're like, well, why don't we say this instead of that, and blah, 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 blah. You know, it wasn't particularly funny, but it was very interesting,
mm-hmm.
you know, seeing them edit the sketch. Okay, we can take this out. Let's move this here. Why don't you say that? And I found that very interesting on that album.
Yeah, good point. You know, that's something we need to cover on this show again. We haven't done enough Nichols and May, so, man, we have to dig back into that.
Nichols and May is hilarious, yes.
Oh, so good.
I think the very, very underrated comedy duo.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they only did, you know, just the scant few albums and, you know.
Yes, I think three or four albums, not mm-hmm. a lot.
But they're all good. They're all brilliant. They're all, and I'd yeah. forgotten that they did that bit. Well, what I want to do, because I can recommend Neil's Heavy Concept album highly. It's one, like I said, normally I don't go out of my way, but I want to make sure people understand it's a damn delight. But I want to hear from you. What's a good reason to listen to this album? Maybe you don't know the Young Ones. Maybe you don't know any of the actors in it. Maybe you know of them, but only in a certain light. What's a good reason to listen to this album?
The good reason to listen to this album is, I would just say, just because it's fun. It's just really fun. The album does not take itself seriously, which sounds weird for a comedy album, but it's not. It's like the album is very self-aware. And like I said, if you put a pair of headphones on and turn off the lights and put this album on and just listen to it, I'll guarantee that you'll have a good time, because it's just so fun, and it's just so fresh, and it's just so odd, and it's sort of like listening to a TV show where everything just flows into everything else. So you're listening to the TV show and you can use your imagination. You can see him. What's the scene where the lounge, mm-hmm. God Save the Queen, where uh-huh. where they're doing a lounge version of the Sex Pistols?
Yeah, and that might be the first time anybody's done it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and that's Nigel Planner doing both the Nigel and the American.
I love it.
He's doing both those voices. So, but you know, yeah, just you know, yeah, I guess can't. It's just fun. It's just fun, and you know, it's very clever as well. It's one of those stupid clever ones. It's like it's so stupid it's clever.
Sure.
That's what this album is, and I love stupid clever. I love stupid clever.
Well, that's perfect. And
And I'll tell you what, you know, Hole in My Shoe, Lentil Nightmare, My White Bicycle, Hurdy Gurdy Man. Yeah, these are good versions of these songs on yeah. this album.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. His Hurdy Gurdy Man, it's like, I'll put that up there with Donovan's Hurdy Gurdy Man.
It's great.
I thought it was that good. So
that's perfect.
And it's like I said, if you're from the 80s, if you grew up in the 80s, this is a nice time capsule. So if you grew up in the 80s, it'll bring back memories. If you want a snapshot of what the 80s comedy scene might have been like, this is a good album.
Yeah. It's perfect. This album, Jesus, this episode's not going to come out for several weeks, but I want you to tell people where they can find you. If you know of any upcoming dates, anything like that, let people know where they can find you.
Okay, so you can find me. My website is scottyblanco.com.
Mm-hmm.
My Twitter handle is @scottwhite91. I will be doing a Canadian tour at the end of the summer.
Awesome.
At the end of August, I'll be starting a Canadian tour. All those dates will be on my website. And a project that I have of mine is my father is going to be 93 this year, and he learned to text at 89.
Uh-huh.
And what he does is he just sends me these funny texts, sort of like he calls himself Bulldog.
Uh-huh.
So he's Bulldog. He's Bulldog White, and he calls me Spider because I love Spider-Man growing up. So he's Bulldog and I'm Spider. And it's sort of like the secret life of Walter Mitty. He goes, did I tell you that, you know, Spider, did I tell you that time I fended off those cattle rustlers on the Ponderosa? So what I've done is I have taken those texts and written backstories to them, and it's called the Bulldog Chronicles. And so if you go on Facebook and just look up the Bulldog Chronicles, it'll take you to the page where you can actually read the blog of the Bulldog Chronicles. That's something I'm very, very proud of.
I love
it. And it's a salute to my dad as well. So
that's awesome. That sounds phenomenal. I'm literally going to the webpage now. That sounds phenomenal to me. Well, again, go ahead.
And he has his own Twitter page, the Bulldog Crow. Yes, but you can find that if you go to my Twitter page, that it'll tell you about that as well. So
that's awesome. That is exciting. Well, thank you again for doing the show. I do really appreciate it. And thank you for coming back a second time and putting up with all this crazy shit, but this, it ended up worth it. I really do appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to do it. I'm glad you enjoyed the album. I'm glad this wasn't a chore for you to do.
No, not at all. It was phenomenal. I will be re-listening to it. And as I've said, I got a fairly large collection that I'm just trying to burn through, but this is one that I will actually have to revisit because I liked it that much. So I just feel like I should let everybody know you can go to instagram.com/JasonKlom. Just find me at Jason Klom on it. This is how old I am. Just go. I'm doing that. Hashtag the professional blur. I'm talking about all my extra work. I'm posting photos of me as an extra, posting photos of stuff that I've stolen from the set, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not a lot. I'm not a career criminal. I just, every once in a while, I take a little thing here and there. Also, go to CelerySoundRecords.com. You guys can find the new album. Well, it's a re-release from Paul Dooley's 1961 album, Booked Solid. We've re-released that as a download. Should be coming out as a physical copy sometime next year, I'm guessing. And later this year, my next comedy album, sketch comedy album, is coming out with my sketch group, Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour. And I know that there's something else, but I'm entirely forgetting it. And it doesn't matter, because if you guys just go to stolendress.com, all my stuff is there. I'm really annoying about putting stuff up there. So you'll find it no matter what. Well, thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years.